Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability, helping prepare elected officials to have winning strategies in the state legislatures. And you can find out more by visiting the very robust website, thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to visit with John Middlemore, the editor-at-large for fee.org. Right now, we have with us Mark Schulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com, a terrific multimedia website, good for kids of all ages, including you and I. He's also located in Tel Aviv and certainly has a firsthand report for us on what's going on. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. So the Hamas attack, surprise attack, this is just a horrific, awful thing that's going on. Maybe you could tell us about it.
Absolutely. It really is horrific from every standpoint. It started Saturday morning. First, it started with a series of missile attacks. I was actually gotten up early and was taking a short walk at 6:15 in the morning, and suddenly I heard two booms, which I didn't pay that much attention to until a minute later I started hearing sirens in the distance. And what that meant was that not exactly where I was, but somewhere in another part of Tel Aviv, there was an air raid siren going off, and the two booms I heard were the firing of the Iron Dome system. But it was complete and total surprise, and it turned out over the course of the morning there were 2,000 rockets fired at Israel. A few of them got through. Most of them were intercepted. But that was really not the real story. The main story was the fact that Hamas fighters managed to breach the border wall, which is really just a series of, when you think about a wall, you think of big concrete barriers, etc. No, what it is just a series of fences. Underground, there's actually a big wall because trying to stop tunnels, but they were able to usually just take a bulldozer and just open the wall with the bulldozer. Huh. They managed immediately to shoot the cameras in the various places and then killed all of the women, mostly the women in this job, who were watching the cameras. In other words, the personnel who was watching the cameras to see if anyone was crossing the border. And they immediately swarmed in. They attacked 22 different settlements along the border area, and they randomly killed men, women, and children. And there was also, not far from the border, there was a music festival taking place.
Right.
One of these all night new music festivals in sort of like in the field, so to speak, or in the desert.
Right.
There were probably a couple of thousand people at that festival. The people started running for their lives, obviously, and Hamas gunned down 260 of them.
Awful.
People from all over the world just gunned them down. And so altogether at the moment, we know of 700 people who were killed during that initial assault. The guess is that number will go to 1,000 or so when all the bodies are found. And then for the last 2 days, the army has been involved in retaking control of that area, the various kibbutzim and other settlements in that area. They've sent a huge number of troops down to the area. At this point, about an hour ago, the army spokesman announced that the area is secure, that the border fence, which was broken in 22 places, there's now a tank basically sitting in every place that that there was a border break, and there are hundreds of Hamas fighters dead along the wall, along the border, who tried to get in or get out at this point.
Yeah. The report is a hostage taking by the Hamas.
They've taken what seems to be 120 people,
wow,
including an 85-year-old woman, children under the age of five, whole families. They also took about 12 Nepalese and 10, I think, Thai, who were farm workers who were working in the area. And, of course, they're looking to use them as bargaining chips. At the moment, Israel is attacking from the air at Gaza and has drafted 300,000 men into the reserves, which is the largest reserve drafting in Israel's history. Wow. They've never before drafted 300,000 troops. The fear is that there might be an attack at the same time from the north, from Hezbollah in the north. And so that's the great fear, and that's why they've drafted so many soldiers at this point. takes time, of course. You draft them, you bring them back into the Army, even though the Army is set up with reserve units, it takes time until they're ready to fight, obviously, at least a couple of days.
Yeah.
To get their equipment and all those other sort of things.
Now, I understand that Hezbollah has already made attacks on Israel in conjunction with...
Well, so yesterday there were a mortar attack on Israel. It was more symbolic than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right before we went on the air, there was a rocket attack. 12 rockets were fired at northern Israel. It's not clear if Hezbollah fired them or some Palestinian group in Lebanon did. That'll be known in the next hour or two. But you know, Israel very much doesn't want Hezbollah to get involved, because who wants to fight a two-front war? And Hezbollah has 120,000 rockets and missiles.
Yeah.
And so that's really a problem. The United States, the Biden administration, has come strongly out in support of Israel at this point, both in terms of supplying it with a lot of the weapons that were already in the pipeline and planned to be delivered over the next year are being rushed at this point, particularly bombs and other consumables. And the U.S. is sending the aircraft carrier Gerald Ford and a cruiser strike force to be off Israel's border to sort of be a deterrent to Hezbollah or Iran starting up in the middle of this other fighting.
So there's criticism of the Biden administration for the $6 billion settlement.
Yeah, that's all bullshit. Excuse my expression. It's total bullshit. The $6 billion was already Iranian. It's all sitting in Qatar. They haven't been able to draw it down at all. It was just moved from South Korea to Qatar, and it can only be dispersed with the U.S. approval. It's all just talking points of ridiculousness, let's put it that way.
Okay, good.
I've never seen such ridiculousness, blaming the Biden administration, which in the end is turning out to be the most effective pro-Israel administration in American history, to be quite honest with you, when it comes to actual actions and not in terms of talk. So we'll see what happens. Again, it's not the American fight, it's the Israeli fight, and it's the Israeli army that's going to have to fight and go into Gaza. And while I was one of those people, amongst almost everybody else, who was against previously a ground invasion of Gaza, because the costs are both in Israeli troops, but also thousands and thousands of Palestinians that will no doubt die in such a battle. There is no choice. If what they did was so barbaric, in such a way that they have to be eliminated from the face of the earth at this point.
Absolutely. So, and it's clear also that Netanyahu has not declared war against Palestine, but against Gaza, or against, I should say, Hamas.
Against Hamas. This is the first time, actually, the country has declared war since 1973.
Right.
It has certain legal implications, and also it looks likely, Netanyahu is dragging his feet right now, but it looks likely there'll be some sort of unity government for the period of the war. The country is demanding it. Even the right-wing part of the government is demanding it, because you don't fight a war when you're divided like Netanyahu divided the country in the last 6 months. And I would suspect that there'll be some sort of a unity government in place within 24 to 48 hours, but who knows.
So, Mark, there's some questions about the surprise element of this. In other words, is this a lapse in Israeli security?
Absolutely. There were two lapses here that were catastrophic. Lapse number one was total intelligence failure. Total intelligence failure. No one can quite understand how they pulled this off with absolutely not the slightest bit of advance warning. There is some word that sometime in the middle of the night there may have been some information, but wasn't at all definite, and like I said, it was in the middle of the night, a few hours before it actually began. So that was the failure number one. Actually, there are three major failures. Failure number two was on the tactical level. The thought was that the fence and the defenses there would be enough to stop any sort of assault. Israel spent $1 billion on the fence, but fences can be overcome. And so fences sound like a good idea, but they really don't ultimately work. And the result of that was there just weren't enough troops there because they were relying on the fence.
Yeah.
And so a lot of troops were in other areas, and it was a weekend. People get in Israel, the Israeli army as opposed to the American army, you get leave almost every weekend or every second or every third weekend to go home.
It was also a holiday as well, wasn't it?
Right. It was a holiday weekend. So you'd have to assume that over the small number of troops that were guarding the border, a third of them were home.
Yeah.
So that made it even worse. And then, of course, there's the conceptual failure. The fact is that since certainly for the last 10 years, the view was, you know, we can live with Hamas. It's a jihad Islamic that we have to fight against. We'll leave the Hamas alone. Also, they're a good balance to the Palestinian Authority. Those people who very much don't want a Palestinian state, that way there'll be a balance. We can say there's no one to talk to. And so Hamas was allowed to grow and grow and grow. That was, of course, a tremendous strategic mistake.
These are such interesting observations and thoughts, Mike. I really appreciate your commentary on this. We've got more to talk about. Can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
We're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matt Chionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310. You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by Gulf Shore Playhouse, changing lives through exceptional theater experiences. And you can find out more and get tickets to some great performances coming up. Visit the website gulfshoreplayhouse.org. Coming up, we're going to visit with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's historycentral.com. Mark, thank you again for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. So any other comments or thoughts about the attack in Israel before we move?
Yeah, two things I want to bring up. One, just a little historic brief so people understand who Hamas is, and when you hear that Israel's been blockading Gaza and things of that nature. Israel pulled out of Gaza 12 years ago in totality, and the hope was that and they removed the settlements that were in Gaza, and the hope was that the Palestinian Authority would rule it and turn Gaza into Singapore, so to speak. I mean, it has beaches. It could be something great, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened very soon after that was Hamas overthrew the Palestinian Authority and literally threw Palestinian Authority people from 10-story buildings and killed them. And they took over the government, so to speak, of Gaza. The quartet, which was made up of the U.S., Great Britain, the Soviet, I guess it's Russia at that time, and the EU, came to the Hamas and said, okay, you want to be recognized, you want continuation of international support, you have to accept two basic things. One, a renouncing of terror, and two, an acceptance of the previous agreements that the Palestinian Authority stated. They said, no, we are in war with Israel, we will retake all of Israel, and that was their position. What does a country do when another country or a group says that we're at war with you and we're going to retake all of your country, well, you sort of blockade it to make sure they don't get too many arms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been going on. And so, yes, they've been blockaded for all these years. All they had to do was accept the quartet's conditions, and the blockade would have gone away.
Yeah.
So that's very important for people to keep in mind.
I think it's also important to consider the distinction between the Palestinians and Hamas. Hamas is basically, I mean, in my view, from what I've learned, at least, maybe you could clarify, the Palestinians are really victims of Hamas.
To some extent, but, you know, it's absolutely true. And, you know, certainly they're not all the Palestinians of Hamas. But I need to bring into perspective there are other places. You know, not all of Italians were Mussolini, and not all Germans were Nazis. As a matter of fact, Nazis were a minority party, but they controlled the country.
Right.
So, you know, at some point you have to say, you know, right now Israel's cut off electricity, it's going to cut off water. I think it's the right thing to do. I don't think a country that's firing on you, and a country that has just killed 700 of your people, probably 1,000 of your people, 900 of which are women, children, and other civilians, you have to provide them with water and electricity.
Yeah.
If their people are going to starve, then stop the fighting. Right. Release the hostages. You know, I mean, I can't imagine the Allies providing food for German cities during the middle of World War II.
Yeah, well, thank you for that clarification, Mark. You had another point you wanted to make about...
Yes, absolutely. So the other point I just want to just make how torn this country is at this point. Torn in the sense of hurt, and the fact that the army failed and what they did, but also right now what we're having on our TV screens, there are at least maybe a few hundred people, maybe even a little more, who do not know what happened to their loved ones, mm-hmm. whether they were killed or whether they were kidnapped by Hamas. And the army announced today it'll take 24 to 72 hours to be able to inform everybody who was kidnapped that their families have been kidnapped, also to identify all the bodies that have been found, because you really don't know who was kidnapped until you've identified all the bodies.
Right.
So, but it's cutting people, we're seeing person after person getting on TV and saying, please tell me where my child is. Tell me where my sister is, et cetera, et cetera.
And, heartbreaking.
You know, that's really difficult to put it bluntly.
Yeah.
And of course, the fact that they have pictures of children. They took a 6-year-old child. They put him, and he happens to look just like my grandson. So it's really particularly problematic. They put him in a circle of Palestinian kids, and they told all these kids, taunt him and hit him. And they showed the pictures of that. I mean, who does things like this?
I know.
I'm not talking about the women they raped and the women that they've paraded around naked. Right. We won't get into that. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that report, Mark. It's hopefully this will have come to some sort of a good end, but it is just such a difficult time for Israelis, and I think for the rest of the world too.
Absolutely. To have people, they put ISIS in their back pocket, to be honest with you, in terms of cruelty and the number of people they just killed.
Yeah. So let's move to Poland. What's happening in Poland?
Well, Poland is about to have an election. The ruling party controls all of the media, and they control part of the election apparatus. On the other hand, there were probably 2 million people in the streets this past weekend protesting against the ruling party. They are not, and certainly in the cities, they are not at all popular. Their support is mostly rural and conservative. Conservative small c, and it's not clear what's going to happen. They've created a lot of fake news, scaring things about refugees about to come. Poland has almost none. All sorts of things of that nature. Since they control the media, with the exception of one TV channel that's independent, they do a very good job of manipulating public opinion to some extent. Despite that, public opinion shows that the opposition will win this election. But will they actually be allowed to win the election? We don't know.
Interesting.
So that's really the story in Poland. The election, I believe, is next week. So we'll see where it goes.
Any comments at all about Poland and its relationship with Russia and Ukraine?
Yeah, so it gets really complicated there because, again, it falls into... Poland is very anti-Russian, obviously. They were occupied by the Russians. No party in Poland is pro-Russian.
Mm.
Not the opposition, not the government, no one is pro-Russian. terms of Ukraine, there was always some rivalry between Ukraine and Poland over borders, for instance. The border between Poland and Ukraine moved many times in history.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always an issue in any place. But on top of that, there's this problem with the Ukrainian grain and getting the Ukrainian grain to market, and the fears of the Polish farmers that it will compete with their grain and therefore bring down the prices. So the Polish government doesn't want to allow any Ukrainian grain to transit Poland in the fear that it'll end up in Poland.
Mm.
So it's created a level of tension between the two countries, but ultimately their interests are pretty much the same. They both hate the Russians, and generally speaking, the Poles have been very strong supporters of Ukraine until now. So
the enemy by enemy is my friend.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mark Schulman, again, founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Hope you check it out. Terrific website, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, really appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good week, Bob.
You as well. Thank you so much. All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with John Millamore. He is the editor-at-large for FEE.org. It's the website for the Foundation for Economic Education. We're going to do that and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.